Matt, I'm just going to pray for you, if that's all right. Dear Lord Jesus, we just thank you for Matt. Thank you for his time today. Thank you for what you've put in his heart. We thank you for the work he's doing. We pray you would open our ears to hear what he has to say. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you. You should probably wait till afterwards before you give me a round of applause, or not. I've met some of you before. I was here 2 years ago. Came with my wife and I think my youngest son. I've got four boys. The 20 down to seven. In my past life, for almost 30 years, I led Southampton Vineyard. Dan and Emily were part of that church for a number of years while Emily was a student in Southampton. And so it's great. And when we came here 2 years ago, we were driving away, and my wife said, "You know what? I could find that home in that church. It was just great." And then she said, "Actually, no, probably not, because we'd ruin it. our kids don't behave as well as their kids." She said. What I do now is I am part of the church engagement team at World Vision. World Vision is the biggest Christian charity in the world. It's the biggest children's charity in the world, and somehow has managed to be the best kept secret in the UK evangelical church. So a big part of my job is trying to rectify that. When I was here 2 years ago, I talked about some of our work in Uganda, and a number of you signed up to sponsor children. So I want to talk to you today a little bit of an overview of what World Vision does, but also 2 years on, what's going on there? What is it you're supporting? Let me start with this. This is the prayer of our founder, Bob Pierce, from 72 years ago, I think it was. "Let my heart be broken by the things that break the heart of God." That is the foundation of who World Vision is. That is our starting point. We work with the world's most vulnerable children. So we have five criteria of vulnerability, and don't ask me what they are. I do know, but I can't remember. So they have to meet at least two of those in order for us to work with them. So we're talking about the kids who are absolutely at the bottom of the pile, the most hopeless context that we work in. And we work in three main sort of spheres of work. So first of all, we work in emergencies. So that would be earthquakes and floodings and wars and droughts, tsunamis, man-made and natural disasters. We have teams around the world, so we will always be one of the first agencies at an emergency. And then following on from that, we work in fragile states. So this might be an environment where the government is just unstable, or it's an oppressive regime, and there's no way of building anything sustainable there, but we're there to help. But it might also be what follows from a disaster. So if you take the Turkey-Syria earthquake last year, so I was speaking at Stevenage Vineyard, actually, 13 days after that earthquake happened, and I couldn't find a single article on the BBC website about the earthquake anymore. It just wasn't sexy anymore. But it's going to take a full generation to rebuild what happened there. So we're one of the aid agencies there, particularly in Syria, where the poverty is much worse. We're working there to help rebuild. So we will be running refugee camps and helping to set up semi-permanent education and health and psychological trauma that people have gone through. Just helping with that whole process for as long as it takes. And so the third area that we work in is sustainable development. So this is where you came in with Chosen. So how World Vision works, first of all, we have a policy of a minimum of 95% local staff. So World Vision is very much about decolonization. You'll hear that a lot in international development at the moment. It's trying to undo the damage of colonialism. But we have a minimum 95% local staff. In practice, it's nearer 99%. So it's always local staff that are doing the work. Each national office is self-governing. We're a partnership of offices. So we in the UK don't tell them how to run things in Uganda. We help to, our role is to finance them in what they're doing. But we will go into a community that has it's stable enough now that you can start building something. We will spend 2 years with the church leaders and the community leaders putting together with them a plan for what needs to happen. We will then spend, the plan will be a 15-year plan, at the end of which we're just not needed anymore. So that's how we work. And you know, you're saying about things being hopeless. I just need a little bit of hope here for you, okay? You hear a lot, oh, you know, eat up your food, there are children starving in Africa, or this kind of stuff. All, you know, I remember growing up with that all the time. Who remembers Live Aid? For those of you who are too young to remember Live Aid, it was a gig. At the time of Live Aid, 40% of the world's population lived in extreme poverty. Okay, that is the equivalent of less than $2 a day. 40%. At the beginning of the pandemic, that was down to 7.5%. And it was a straight line. The pandemic changed things. It went up to about 9%. But here's the thing. We're winning. We are winning. We are actually making a difference. Things are changing. It's not the same as it's always been, and it's not going to be the same as it's always been. So there's some hope. Those are three areas we work in. So I want to talk about Pajule. So Pajule is a community in northern Uganda, and those of you who signed up to sponsor are supporting the work in that community. So I want to tell you the story of Pajule because it really summarizes everything that World Vision does. So in 1986, a man called Joseph Konya formed an army called the Lord's Resistance Army, the ironically named Lord's Resistance Army. And he started a civil war in northern Uganda, and it was a horrific time. We met some of the survivors of that war, and it is beyond comprehension that human beings can do that to one another. But it was horrendous. And during that time, it was 20 years the war went on, if you didn't live in a refugee camp, you were going to be killed. It was as simple as that. During that time, 30,000 children were abducted. Many of them have never been seen since. Many of them became child soldiers. It was a horrific time. And still, even now, Uganda is known as the Pearl of Africa, you know, for its incredible diverse wildlife and bird life and things. But that part of Uganda, even today, there's no animals. There's no wild animals because it's still recovering from all of this. So for 20 years that went on. So World Vision worked, and we ran refugee camps along with other aid agencies, and we supported people in the refugee camps. Around 15 years ago now, the war came to an end and people came out of the camps. And you would think it would have been an amazing, incredible time, but actually what they came out to was hopelessness and depression and a rebuilding and survival and trauma. And actually, when we met some of these survivors of the war, there's a photograph of them here. So these two lovely people, sub-county chairman Amana Afonso and Margaret Adiero, they talked about what it was like. And the time after the war was almost worse than the war. People were too scared to build anything. They were too scared to plant crops. They were too scared to invest in anything. The suicide rate was through the roof. The Ugandan staff were saying they were attending 5 funerals a day that were suicide. And we were driving in a truck along one of these roads. It's the middle of nowhere, Pajule. It's really rural. It's all mud tracks. And we're driving along, and one of the people we took with us was saying, well, what's different today from there? And he said, well, you see these people getting out of the way of the car? They wouldn't have got out of the way of the car before. They would have just said, well, I've got nothing to live for, I might as well get run over. It was so hopeless. And so when we launched the sustainable development work that we do, we launched Chosen. I think when I was here 2 years ago, I showed you a video. And at the launch party for Chosen, there were some of the women in the community performed a dance. And One of my friends, who's a church leader in Edinburgh, was at that event, and one of the Ugandan staff said to him, the woman leading the dance, she has two bullets in her leg from the war still. She saw her husband murdered in front of her eyes, and she's leading this dance. He said, this is a hope dance. It's not been performed for 15 years. And so that's when we launched Chosen, and that's what some of you amazing people have been supporting. So Chosen is how we fund the sustainable development that we do. It's child sponsorship, but it's not what child sponsorship is traditionally. In World Vision, the children are ambassadors. You're sponsoring, the child is an ambassador for community. You're sponsoring the entire community. One in five children in that community is registered for sponsorship, but all of them receive the same benefits. And so we visited last year. It was almost exactly a year ago. Remember the heat wave last year? We left here and we arrived in Uganda. It was the same temperature in Kampala that it was in Heathrow when we left. That seems like a very distant memory, doesn't it? So I want to talk to you about the impact that the work, what you're supporting and what's going on. So first of all, so I was a church leader in Southampton. Historically, the disunity in the churches in Southampton was horrific. It was terrible. I mean, churches just did not speak to one another. Two of the biggest churches in the city, one of them literally would not speak to anyone from the other church for something around 40 years. It was terrible. It was terrible. And so I went there as a student. I come from Luton originally, which is why I live in Southampton. And so I remember going there as a student, and it was so that the factions in the Christian Union, Southampton had a really big Christian Union. And we worked so hard at it as churches. And it was really good. It was amazing. I mean, a lot of the churches we used to meet regularly because they were like trying to find the secret of revival. And one of the secrets of the key to revival was there was a guy in Argentina and it was unity. So they got this guy over to talk about the unity and how it was a key to revival. And he said, yeah, actually, you've got a higher level of unity than we have here. We have over there. So obviously that wasn't the key. But what my point is, when I talk about church unity, I'm not just talking about it lightly. But when I went to Padule, I have never seen anything even close to the unity that there is in the churches there. And the church leaders told us that this is because of World Vision's work. So the way that World Vision works is in the community, and we partner with all the local churches. So in that picture there, that's the Hope Dance. To keep going, there we go. That's it was some of the church leaders. There's Anglicans, Catholics, Baptists, Pentecostal church leaders. And these people all preach in each other's churches. They support one another. They phone each other up for help. They really genuinely act like one church in that place. And in the middle of all of that, there's an imam from the local mosque who we met at a prayer meeting saying, praise the Lord. And he is fully engaged in all the work we're doing. And so we deliver a lot of our work through the churches. A lot of the teaching and the training goes through the churches. And what they found in East Africa was a lot of people just had no self-worth. They didn't want to be helped because they didn't feel they were worth helping. So in World Vision East Africa developed a teaching called Empowered Worldview, which is 3 days of training. And it's biblical teaching, and it's all about your value, it's about community, it's about your dreams and your visions for life and your ambition and your hopes and your, it covers all of life. And so this imam is teaching this biblical teaching to his mosque. And what was really poignant was we were there, there was a massacre in a Christian school in Uganda last year. We were there when it was happening, but it was the other end of the country. So there's that going on there. And then here, there's an imam who's fully integrated with all the church leaders. And we spoke to the faith and development guy for Uganda. He said, look, we just don't know what to do with this guy. He said, we don't want him shaping what we do, but we love it that he's involved in it. He says, I've got a Muslim brother and a sister, and I don't know how this works. So, you know, we're learning to do that. But, you know, it's incredible to see this unity. I've never seen anything like it anywhere. We went to visit one of the communities. What they do in Uganda is they put people into clusters of households. So there'd be up to 20 or 30 households in a cluster. And that cluster will elect a council to run it from their own people. So we visited this one. There was a woman who was the leader of the council. Do you want to move to the next one? Yeah. And within the council, there'll be someone who's in charge of safeguarding for the children. There'll be someone who's in charge of health. There'll be someone in charge of agriculture. People, you know, they're self-governing communities. And also, two of the people there will be registered to diagnose and treat malaria, diarrhea, and pneumonia, because they're the three biggest killers of children. So they carry the medicine with them in the home. And so that immediately eliminates an awful lot of infant mortality. And World Vision's involvement there is it's about training the parents about nutrition. It's about training them in health and hygiene, even things like down to hand washing. So a lot of the churches would deliver this teaching on hand washing and hygiene because it's so critical. And nutrition's so critical because a lot of the kids are ill a lot, so they miss a lot of school. They're ill because they're not eating properly, and they're ill because they're not basic standards of hygiene. So it's training them in all of these things. When this particular community we visited, their pump had broken, their water pump. And so one of the pastors who came with us said, are you gonna buy them a new pump? And the World Vision staff said, no, that's not what we do. We will train them how to fix the pump, and we will help them to save the money to replace it. There's no point in us doing it and then walking away in 15 years, the first time it breaks. It's not, they're done. It's everything that World Vision does is about equipping them to not need us. It was astonishing, this community. And one of the things that struck me when I was there was every single one of these parents was born in a refugee camp. Every one of them. And as we walked away, so next slide, there was a pastor who'd come with us on the trip. And she just came up to me. She said, I don't know how to communicate this. She said, I came expecting to see sadness and deprivation, but all I see is joy and hope. All I see is joy and hope. And it hit me. It's like, this is what it looks like when the kingdom of heaven comes. This is what it looks like, the unity in the church, the joy and the hope. I listen a lot to the Bible Project podcast, and they're doing a whole year looking at the Sermon on the Mount at the moment. And they were looking at the Beatitudes. And, you know, it struck me because I remember the Beatitudes was a really big influence on me listening to Dallas Willard stuff 25 years ago. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they'll be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Well, Tim Mackey says that the word, see, that's why I get myself into trouble, because Ben's here. I was really hoping he wasn't going to turn up. I know I could get away with saying anything. But Makarios, Tim Mackey said, it's not the word that's most often used in the Jewish scriptures for blessed, as in God's blessed them. He says it means living the good life. That Makarios means living the good life. So the poor in spirit are living the good life. I mean, you look at, it's insane, because you kind of look at the list of people that Jesus says are living the good life, and it's exactly the kind of people who aren't. And it's like either he's lost the plot or there's something else going on here. But what Dallas Willard said is, this is what it looks like when the kingdom comes. This is what it looks like under the rule of God. That the poor in spirit, the powerless, are living the good life. That those who are mourning are living the good life. That the meek are living the good life. The meek, the, the unimportant ones. And so, I think it's, these are the people who have most to gain by the coming of the kingdom. These are the people who are in the best place to receive when the kingdom comes. And when I went to Bajule, and I heard, see, we went to this community and we heard, and we saw it, and this pastor came out and said this to me. And it was after that that we met these two survivors of the war and heard how horrific it had been before then. And now you understand why the hope dance was so significant. But it was incredible. And I came away and go, wow, this is, I came away from Padula. I was like, this is what it looks like when the kingdom comes. And I used to talk to church leaders. I meet a lot of church leaders and I speak in a lot of churches. And you know, when I was here last time, I talked about our responsibility for helping those who aren't as well off as us. And that is true. But after I came back from Padula last year, so what I say now is, hey, do you want to be part of this? It's not, oh, poor them. It's like, do you want to be part of this? And do you know what the conversation I have most often with church leaders now? How do we get that here? This is what it looks like under the rule of God. This is what it means. Blessed are the poor in spirit. This is what it looks like. So from war and trauma and depression and hopelessness come unity and joy and hope. When we were in the car one day when we were out there, and I said, could we meet some of the ex-child soldiers and the Ugandan stuff? Well, I don't know. I don't know. And I said, well, have we met some? And he said, well, yeah, probably, because they're in all the communities. But such is the reconciliation and the forgiveness and the healing that the Ugandan World Vision staff don't even know which ones they are. They are so integrated back into the community. These are the people, these are the children who wreak the horrors onto people, and yet they're now adults and they're fully integrated in the community as though never happened. That's what it looks like when the kingdom comes. It's incredible. So my invitation to you today is, if you're not already part of this, would you like to be part of this? It would be fantastic for you to be part of it. As I say, we support this through child sponsorship, but what we do in Padula is different. It was launched in Padula from the beginning. In World Vision, you can sponsor a child by going on our website, but in Padula, we launched something called Chosen, and with Chosen, the child chooses the sponsor. Now, you know, don't tell anyone I said this, but it was meant to be a marketing idea. But we got asked to go over to, I went over to Uganda a couple of years ago because they asked me to come over, and they asked a load of us to come over because they said, you have to see the impact of Chosen that nobody had anticipated. From the child's choosing, it impacted all of the work. They found that the parents realized that the children were the hope. We met one parent said, when I saw my child, because they what happens is that it's a, can you put that next one? This is what it looks like at a choosing party. There's all the photographs up, and the child, and this parent said, when I saw my child choose that picture, I knew there was hope for Uganda. And another one said, when I saw my daughter choose that picture, I knew the whites didn't own us anymore. And the Ugandan staff were saying, the thing is, before, if you'd said to a parent, what sponsorship, they'd say, well, someone comes and takes a photograph of our child, and then someone comes along later and says, your child's been sponsored, but we don't really know what it means. But with this, what happens is once a month, there is this big party, and it's a whole day, and there is hosted by one of the churches. There's teaching, there's games for the children, there's medical people there updating children's health records and giving them vaccines and things. And the children who are doing the choosing are taken aside, they have explained to them, and then they come and they choose. And it's this whole big family fun day, and there's food at the end of it, and it's amazing. And they said that because the parents are seeing it all happening in front of them, that it's so much more transparent and they're so much more bought into it all than they've ever seen before. And so because they're more bought into it, they're more bought into the agriculture, they're more bought into the nutrition, and they're more bought into the education and everything. And like I said, you know, we have a 15-year plan, but this community we visited was 2 years old, and they were telling us, well, there's one down the road that's been going for 5 years, and World Vision's involvement there now is just monitoring. That's all we do. And they actually train other communities now. Instead of it taking 15 years to see that incredible transformation, it's 5 years because of Chosen, because the parents are so much more engaged in it, because it's about the whole community. So, I mean, sponsorship in many ways has a bad reputation, and some ways I think possibly rightly so. Something needs to change in the way sponsorship's been done, but I hope that that's what World Vision do. But I read this quote, child sponsorship holds us accountable to our promise to improve the lives of the world's most vulnerable children whose names we know and whose stories we tell. What I love about Chosen is it's not a concept. I'm not just saying to you, hey, come and support this community you know nothing about, in a country you know nothing about, in a region in that country. It's got a face. And these are real people. So this is Glory, and she chose our family. She chose us because of the baby. My then 5-year-old was not best pleased about being called a baby, but she chose us, and so we know a bit about her life, but we get updates, but it's not just what's going on in her life, it's what's going on in the lives of all of the children, because what's going on with her is the same story for all of the children her age in that community. So it's not a concept, it's a person, it's real. So, right, we've got a little video to show. Did you want to get the kids in? You don't have to. Am I early? Okay, I'll do a little dance while we're waiting. But so we're going to show a video. This is when we were out there, we decided we would follow one girl at the choosing party through the whole process of choosing. And then we contacted the family who she chose and spoke to them. So it's a couple of minutes long, this video just talks about that whole experience of it. Honestly. Do you want to wave to the kids or should we share the video? What do you want to do? Okay, so we just show the video? Yeah? Okay, let's do that then. Yeah, brilliant. I'll get it away.
We first found out about Chosen attending a conference called Wirefire. It's down on the south coast of England. The video came on the screen one morning, and it really moved me to tears, which is not unusual, but it resonated really deeply within me. And the fact that the children get to choose their families, their sponsors, was something so special. So our children, Phoebe and Josiah, and we want them to be involved as much as possible, don't we?
Yeah, just to expand their vision from where we live in our tiny, tiny place in Yorkshire.
Seeing her mum and her neighbour, it just reminds you of how important that community, that village, is.
choosing party isn't just an isolated event as well, but it's part of a wider community thing is really special as well, because it's, we want to see communities restored, not just individuals. One of my prayers as well is that, that people know they're part of a bigger story, and that goes for us and it goes for faith. It's that we are, we're part of this great story that God is redeeming all things.
So I would love to invite you to join with us in this. There's a QR code that's going to come up there. I've got one or two bits over there. I'll go be standing there in a minute. You can come and scan the QR code, take a selfie, get your and fill in your bank details. And there's in a month from today is the next choosing party, and then you will be chosen by one of the children in that community and be part of what God is doing in this incredible story in Pajule. So I will hand over to you because I'm done.
Thanks, Matt. Worship team, do you want to...